Welcome to Easel Talk, the podcast for EaselInsight.com, with your hosts, Phil Stark and Gabor Svagrik. This podcast is created for artists by artists. To follow along with today's discussion, remember to download the show notes at EaselInsight.com/blog. And now let's get started with today's episode.
Welcome to Easel Talk. My name is Gabor Svagrik.
And I'm Phil Stark.
And today we're going to talk about where to start.
Where to start? Painting.
Painting, of course, since it is about painting, yeah. This show. So we're going to talk about where to start painting. And actually, it doesn't start at painting. That's the kicker.
It does not.
Yeah, it starts by observing. And, of course, that's number one with anything. But, you know, picking things that you love. Do not start painting something that you don't like, really.
So, or don't have any interest in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it becomes this tight illustration, and you can kind of see there's not much soul in it.
Or if you're bored with that subject, your painting will look boring.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and it could be some joke that you actually liked, but you painted it so often that it just lost its luster. So you got to move on then and find something, another thing that you know, you're going to enjoy painting. Looking at the large shapes is a big one. Before you snap that picture with the camera, squint down, squint. You know, if you're farsighted, or I should say nearsighted, then take off your glasses and you have an advantage. Who knew?
Poke an eye out.
Yeah. It'll
give you a different look.
No. Those are kind of big things, because you're looking for pattern. You want to look for those large shapes, light against dark against light, and then break it down into the smaller element. What I like to do is I use the program called Lightroom, and that's where I store all my photos, and then you can show thumbnails sort of the photos. And you can make the thumbnails bigger or smaller, but I make the thumbnails, I don't know, about maybe inch and a half or something like that. And as I look through my references, if they don't look good design-wise there's a good chance if I blow it up full screen, they're not going to look good.
Exactly, yeah.
That doesn't mean that I'm not going to use it. But what it tells me right away, I can't use it out of the can, which sometimes certain photographs were, you know, just very paintable, easier to paint. Mm-hmm. Others, then, if it doesn't work, it doesn't mean toss it out. It means you might have to start working with it. And that's where design comes in.
Yeah. Yeah, and I tend to use the phone, even if I'm painting outside. That's my viewfinder, mm-hmm. is my iPhone, because I can just look through there and change the view a little bit, change the composition. But it does. Your painting starts when you first point the camera. You know, when you try and find a pattern, I think is the first thing you have to start with. Yeah. You have to find those big shapes of pattern that make a composition. Yeah. And it took me a long time to really understand that and realize that it's true that you can't start with falling in love with a tree that you see or the atmosphere and the distant mountains. You have to find a composition that works. And thinking design, composition first, looking for that pattern is the best way to start.
Yeah, so there is a logic in design. It's not an accidental thing. So when you go to a good museum, you look at the paintings. Well, those paintings didn't, they don't look good just because the artist felt that needed to paint that. There was a thought process behind the painting. Again, starting with these large shapes, designing, looking at big shape against small shape, how, you know, is it too heavy on the left side, too heavy on the right side? That's kind of what we mean by large, you know, big shapes. Do I need to place a shape there? So you can also, at that point, if it you kind of, you like the image, but you see some things, then you got to start working with it, which is kind of fun, because it's up to you where you're going to be placing things. And nowadays, digitally, it's so much nicer where you can use, I use Photoshop, but there's other programs out there. You can kind of grab an object and move it over and make it bigger or smaller and see how that object might fit better in a different part of the painting. So use tools like that. Fine artists, they, you know, I don't know why sometimes they think we're so pure and we don't use any tool. No, use any tool that you can. I mean, yeah. Any artist of the past that would have had these tools that we have right now would have used it.
Whatever helps.
Yeah, whatever helps. When Phil and I were going to art school, computers were already there, but were not used the same. They were not as easy to use as it is now.
When you went to art school, they were already there.
I was 19.
They were not there when I was
1989 to 1993.
Yeah, I went back in 1930.
Not 30.
70, 78.
Yeah, so the Apple computer kind of came in the 80s, and then late 80s and early 90s, definitely. But I saw it. I saw in art school, this is the American Academy of Art, and I walked by the computer lab, what do they call it? You know, I looked at it, but it wasn't my thing. I because I still needed to learn how to draw and paint. It doesn't matter. You look at some of these good, like not product design, but they call them for gaming concept mm-hmm. art. The best ones are because the ones that know how to draw and design, right. And they actually use physical paint. There's a good chance they're physically have painted many, many times. For many years before they switched over to digital. That's where you become the best digital artist, is when you actually have real physical paint experience too.
Right.
It sounds weird, right? We're talking about this, but it's the fact that computers are here to stay. And so we're kind of drifting a little bit from this, but the where to start topic, but these are still important points.
No.
So, you know, where to start is it starts with seeing, looking at large shapes and you know, design. These are the big.
Yeah, there's a there's an exhibit at the National Western Heritage Museum. I used to call it the Cowboy Art Museum, I think. But they have Tom Lovell's studio there. They have it all set up with all his stuff. And they have several paintings, large paintings, where they exhibit the process he went through, how he started. And each one of them had tiny thumbnails. And not just one, because you're not going to find the design the first time around. You know, it takes 2, 3, 4, sometimes more. Then it went to a small color study, where drawing wasn't important, just shapes of big values of color. Then from that, it went to a full-size charcoal drawing, and just a beautiful series of charcoal drawings. And then from there was the finished product. And so he did that to prepare and think through each step. So by the time he painted, he's already gone through all the problems he would run into, and he solved them before he even picked up the brush to start the painting. And not that it has to be that process, yeah. But it was interesting to see how he did it. And
yeah, there's no one way of doing things. So these things that we talk about, you know, give it a shot. It's a trial and error thing too. Might not, as Phil said, might not work for you. You know, painting is definitely not, this is like one way of doing things, but basically it's a trial and error, and
right.
We've done a lot of trial and error. So when we talk about something, we talk about from real life experiences that we had. This is not something we read in a book. This is what we do and continue to do and work on things as we move along and discover things.
Here's the other idea too, that if we're learning to paint, everything should be paintable. If I've learned to paint, I should be able to make anything a painting, and that's just not true. It takes a while to really figure out what makes, you know, when you point that camera, what's going to be a good painting.
Yeah.
And it's not falling in love with objects. It's seeing the whole, seeing the pattern, the design.
Yeah, I see this in our Easel Insight membership. Sometimes folks post something and they post the image, the actual photo source. And then they already did the painting, but when I looked at the photo source and I talked about this before, that something that looks cool in a painting, I mean, in the photo, will not look cool
in the
painting. And I see this time and time again, and I tell people, and everybody has to learn the hard way. And the painting surely didn't look, that's fallen, twisted tree didn't look cool in the painting. It just, it will look the opposite. It'll look bad in a painting. So again, that's the trial and error thing that you have to go through yourself. So, you know, you remember that, you know, Gabor and Phil said that that cool thing will not look good in a painting. And then this, you'll probably remember one day and you're like, oh my gosh, I did it. Then, you know, again, this accumulative knowledge, then most likely, hopefully, you are not going to do that again.
Yeah. Yeah. If you go to a photography gallery or a section in a museum that has a photography section, and I go to them once in a while, and I do not see very many photos that would make good paintings. Because they're thinking, so just because something makes a good photograph does not make it paintable or doesn't make it a good painting. So really think through what you're trying to do when you paint something.
Yeah, but it helps you, you know, photography or painting will help you be a better photographer and vice versa.
Yeah.
So don't underestimate photography, because it's not just clicking a button.
Right.
There's more that goes into that. You're the one. The camera does not get up and magically float and pan and zoom into an area. That's you.
Yeah.
That's the human. You did it, not the camera. So sometimes, you know, I have done paintings where the design really have worked out of the box. And they said, well, Gabor, you know, that looks just like the photograph in the sense of the same design. I said, yeah, because the photograph worked. That's why I painted it like that. Simple as that.
Yeah.
If it didn't, you know, if they would have said something like, well, that's a bad design, that's, you know, that's my fault. But it happened to be that that photograph actually worked out pretty well.
Well, that's because you composed before taking the picture. Yeah,
exactly. So Phil said it again. Not magically, the camera floated there and snapped the right picture, zoomed into the right area.
Yeah.
I consciously looked at it. And that's what we consciously do, is look through that lens and think like a painting. That's how we look at scenes. Now, we cannot at that moment take things out, but we know as painters we can eliminate things later on or even add things in it. But generally, the big picture needs to be there in a photo reference when I look at it. The bones have to be there. It
has to be something there you can work with,
turn
into a composition.
The bones have to be there.
And of course, the big part, or a big part of it, is to simplify. Because like all photographs, the camera is going to zoom in and focus on everything.
Yeah.
It doesn't pick and choose what the focal point is. So we have to simplify. We have to get rid of stuff. We have to decide what's important, what's not. I kind of, two ways I like to think of starting. Some of my paintings will be very center of interest oriented. And I can almost start the painting more at the focal point. Then as I finish that, then as I move out, I get bigger, more simpler shapes, softer edges. Or I can start back to front, but still bigger, simpler shapes, and then break them down to smaller shapes. So,
There's two things right away you can ask yourself right away when you look at that photo, or even just with your eye: what can I add and what can I take out?
Yeah.
And then also the third question: why?
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah.
You know, write this one down. This is a good checklist for yourself.
Yeah.
And you have to answer this before, you know, you start that painting. Look at the photo reference, and what do I have to take out, and what I need to add.
And that might be the most important decision: what to take out.
Yeah,
because you can't put everything in. So
generally, we take more things out.
Yeah.
Than what we put in. That's kind of the general thing that happens with, especially with landscape painting, because there's so many things out there. But again, this goes to any type of painting. Doesn't matter, figurative, you paint animals, landscape, still lives, it's still the same process, you know, looking at the big shapes. And
yeah, and everything goes back to the same four basic fundamentals: composition, big shapes, values, and color temperature.
Yeah.
And everything kind of starts there if you can keep things big and simple.
Yeah, keep it simple. It's
Which again, nice segue to Easel Insight membership, because that's what we kind of focus on and try and pull everyone back to in that community group.
So. The fundamentals, and that's where a lot of times I see students are struggling with those fundamental things. Is you have to get past those first, again, in order to create art, and it does take time. So be patient with this stuff. It doesn't happen overnight. Again, this episode is just a piece of the larger puzzle of information that we're hoping that you're gonna use or put in your memory bank and use for your own learning curve. And everybody's different. We don't have the right one answer. We wish we could give you the magic answer to these things, but this is again our experiences. I was gonna talk about it in the other episodes, but there's the best podcast episode I've heard is Overcast. It's an app on your phone. Download it. It's called Overcast. So if you happen to be just listening through your computer, make sure you download the podcast player called Overcast. And I love listening to other podcasts on it. It's a really easy way. And then you can punch it in and pull in our podcast, and you can listen in the car, in the gym, or whatever you want to us. That's right. So we can always be with you.
That's right.
So we can be in your pocket. What did they say? So, well, thank you for joining us today, and we will see you at the next podcast.
See you then. Thanks for listening to another episode of Easel Talk, the podcast that takes your art to the next level. Subscribe to and review our podcasts on iTunes and Stitcher. Check out our website, easelinside.com, for more episodes and information. See you next time on Easel Talk.